Case number four is Polk against Progressive Northern Insurance Company. Mr. Romo.
May it please the court. Good morning, your honors. Good morning, counsel. My name is Christopher Wormhole, and I represent the appellant in this case, Thomas Polk, in his individual capacity and in his capacity as administrator of the estate of his late wife, Kasia Polk. Your honors, this appeal presents a question pertaining to insurance contract enforcement, namely whether Progressive and Secura can avoid paying their proportionate share of the Polk's underinsured motorist claims by relying on payment amounts paid by another UIM insurer. The district court's decision effectively decided the answer to that question was yes, and that decision respectively was an error. The plain policy language, the UIM statute, and public policy all suggest the answer should have been no. The fundamental error in the district court's decision lies in the court's failure to recognize and enforce the plain, unambiguous policy language that governs Progressive and Secura's proportional payment obligations.
Each policy has a clause saying the maximum payable from all insurers together is the maximum on the highest policy. That's $1 million on the AMCO policy.
That's right.
Okay. So your client has received, under the judgments, $1 million. What's left for this appeal?
My client has not received $1 million, Your Honor. My clients received $100,000 from the tortfeasor. That was the third party payment.
Right, $800,000 from AMCO.
Correct.
And $100,000 from SECURA.
The $100,000 was offered by Secura that was not accepted, Your Honor. And in fact,
it's part of the judgment in this case from which you're appealing.
Correct.
So by the time of the judgment, your client is entitled to $1 million. I understand you think Progressive should pay more and Secura, if that's how it's pronounced, should pay less, but Secura hasn't appealed. And it's no skin off your client's nose who pays the other $100,000, which is why I'm puzzled.
Well, it is, Your Honor. There is a fundamental problem in that, and that goes back to the district court's fundamental problem in its decision in failing to recognize proportionate payment obligations. Though that comes from the other insurance provisions that are contained in both contracts, Judge Easterbrook, you had just mentioned, stating that they will only pay.
So are you suggesting that perhaps Progressive should have paid the other insurer its share of the $800,000 settlement?
No, I am not suggesting that, Your Honor, because I believe both our clients are entitled. They have individual claims. Thomas Polk has an IED claim. Kasia Polk has a
But how can the provisions claim. Work together under your theory? They can't. You just want to read out of the entire contract the limit, the policy limit, or the anti-stacking provision.
Right. Well,
just want to ignore it.
No, I'm not asking that.
How do you deal with it then?
Okay, so the anti-stacking language, you need to first look at the statute. I think it's important to consider that because that language helps guide.
Well, here, let me just read it. Let me just read it. If this policy and any other policy providing similar insurance apply to the same accident, the maximum limit of liability under all the policies shall be the highest limit of liability under any one policy. That's $1 million. What do you do with that?
Are you referring to Progressive's
yes,
policy there?
Correct.
Your Honor, Secura has similar language. However, Secura's right. language mirrors what the statute actually says. And I think you have to first look at the statute, which is 2015 ILCS 5/143A2. And what it states in there under subsection 5, Nothing herein shall prohibit an insurer from setting forth policy terms and conditions which provide that if the insured has coverage available under this section under more than one policy or provision of coverage, any recovery or benefits may be equal to, but may not exceed the higher of the applicable limits of respective coverage. It doesn't say all insureds, it doesn't say all recoveries. It's phrased in the singular, that is, if the insured.
Isn't that any, Mr. Pohl?
Any recovery. Well, there's two claimants. Kasia Polk, his deceased wife, has a wrongful death claim. That's one insured under the policies. Mr. Polk has an NIED claim for his injuries related to the accident. He is another in claim. He is another claimant. He's an individual insured. So that's the fundamental error with the district court's decision.
I'm now completely lost. You're asking us to ignore the actual language of the policy. You're referring to a state statute that, so far as I can see, on your own argument, is completely irrelevant. Right? The statute says, nothing herein prohibits X. You seem to be saying that any such clause, nothing prohibits X, means everything other than X is prohibited. Where do we get that in the statute?
Well, you have to read and construe the statute according to its plain terms. And the terms of the statute are phrased in the singular.
No, the plain terms of the statute is, nothing in this statute prohibits X, and we can put X in. And you are saying this implicitly means everything other than X is prohibited. There was an old joke that in Italy, everything that is not prohibited is allowed, but in Russia, everything that is allowed is prohibited, right? You're just saying that everything that is not expressly authorized in Indiana is prohibited. And where do we get that out of state law?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, it's Illinois law.
Sorry.
But that's okay. That's okay.
It's okay. Where do we get that in Illinois law, that everything not expressly allowed is prohibited?
Well, there is the legal maxim that we cited in our brief. I'm going to butcher it, but it in essence, what it means is that if the legislature said X, it intentionally did not intend for Y. So what we stated is what we meant. If we would have meant something else, we would have provided statute.
We are accepting that the statute means what it says. What it says is that a certain kind of clause, that nothing in this statute prohibits a certain kind of clause. And you are arguing that, therefore, every other kind of clause is prohibited. Where do we find that in the statute?
Again, it's
not there.
It's in the text, but it's the phrasing that was used and the words that were deliberately chosen by the legislature. Choosing the word in the words, if the insured, not if the insureds, or stating that any recovery in the singular as opposed to all recoveries.
Oh, look, but you were here for the first case?
I was.
Right. The SEC issues a lot of things that it calls safe harbor regulations. And there was talk about a safe harbor regulation. The safe harbor regulation says A, B, C, and D are not prohibited by this statute or these regulations. On your view, that means E, F, G, H, I, everything else is prohibited. I'm not aware that the SEC or any court has ever reached such a conclusion. You could write a statute that says everything that is not expressly allowed is prohibited, but I don't see that in this statute. You haven't referred us to any case law saying I mean, so where does it come from?
It only, again, comes from the language of the statute, Judge. If there was a case that supported that, we would have cited it. That particular issue is a matter of first impression. But I want to go back real quickly, as I see my time is running out, to one of the fundamental problems with the court's decision, and that's that it eliminated the proportionate payment obligations that are independent on each of the insurers. And one thing I'd like to mention very briefly.
I don't see how that's where I began. I don't see how that is an argument of any concern to your clients. I can see how it's an argument of concern to Secura. But if $1 million recovery is the maximum under all policies, which policy pays it seems to be a matter of indifference, unless you think Secura is bankrupt. If it is, then there's a problem.
No, I think each company has a proportionate payment obligation to fill their proportionate share of the gap. That's what's required. AMCO was responsible for 50% of the underinsured motorist gap. Secura and Progressive are each respectively responsible for 25% of that gap.
So have your clients offered to give AMCO back $300,000?
They have not, Your Honor. It's important to also remember the fact that $800,000 was offered as a global settlement to resolve that litigation that involved the Polk's UIN claims, both of them, and in addition to that, the bad faith and breach of contract claims as well. That was a settlement.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Stauder.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Michael Stauder on behalf of Progressive Northern Insurance Company. The district court's ruling should be affirmed because it correctly found the policy terms were unambiguous and the UIM coverage purchased by the Polks has been exhausted. When analyzing an insurance policy, the court looks at the plain and ordinary meaning of the policy terms. The Progressive policy unambiguously provides combined single limit coverage as expressed in the declarations page and the limits of liability section, which states that that is the most Progressive will pay regardless of the number of claims or insureds arising out of an accident. The plaintiff's argument that this applied per individual is inconsistent with the plain language of the policy. That payment obligation was subject to the provisions of the anti-stacking provision, which, as the court has acknowledged, capped the total amount of UIM coverage at the AMCO limit. The plaintiff's argument as to the anti-stacking provision is flawed for two reasons. One, it's inconsistent with the plain language of the policy terms, and the courts have routinely ruled that anti-stacking language, substantively the same as Progressive's, is not ambiguous. These anti-stacking provisions have been repeatedly enforced by the courts, and the courts have rejected arguments that these are against public policy because they closely mirror the language of the UIM statute. Two, the plaintiffs are reading the anti-stacking provision in isolation. The court must view the policy as a whole, and not in a way that would render one section meaningless. And so the anti-stacking provision must be read in conjunction with the limit of liability section. The purpose of UIM coverage is to bridge the gap between the tortfeasor's insurance and the coverage purchased by the insured. Under the anti-stacking provision, the UIM coverage is capped at the $1 million limit, and after the setup from the tortfeasor, there was a gap of $900,000. That gap was met, and that extinguished the UIM coverage. The case law makes clear that UIM coverage is not intended to allow the insured to recover over and above their UIM limit, which is precisely—
No, I know this is not technically at issue in this appeal, but why was it appropriate for the district court to require Secura to pay $100,000 and Progressive to pay nothing? I could get $50,000 each.
Your Honor, I appreciate that question. I think it goes back to the purpose of the UIM coverage, which is to make the insured whole. And in this case,
I've already said I don't understand why Polk is appealing, because the judgment collectively entitles the plaintiffs to $1 million. I'm asking about the relative shares of Progressive and Secura.
And Your Honor,
it just seems very weird for the district judge to say, well, Secura had offered more than $100,000, so I'm offering it to pay, I'm ordering it to pay $100,000 and Progressive nothing. Presumably the legal entitlements are what influences the judgment and not earlier offers.
And Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question as to why it wasn't split 50-50, that remaining $100,000, why it wasn't split 50-50 between Progressive and Secura, I think that would have been appropriate if the Secura money had not already been offered to the Polks. And so
what somebody has offered in settlement shouldn't be what a district judge orders in a judgment. unless it's legally required. The judgment is supposed to reflect the law and not bargaining positions.
Understood, Your Honor. And my reading of the district court's ruling was that initially Secura had offered even beyond the UIN limits of $1 million. And so it was bringing that back down to the limits that had been subject to the policy provisions. And in that case, as I had said, the purpose of that UIM coverage was to bridge the gap, and that money was on the table between the AMCO $800,000 and the Secura dollar. And that was done before Progressive had made its offer. And so the combination of those two payments from the insurance had extinguished Progressive's obligation. Given that that the pulps were made whole pursuant to what they purchased, the district court's ruling should be affirmed. I have a little bit of time left. I'm happy to answer any other questions the court may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stauder. Ms. Ross. Let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Stauder. Of course, you haven't appealed, so this is not before us.
Good morning, Your Honors. Andrea Ross for Secura. May it please the court. Yes, Your Honor, I anticipated you would ask that question to me as well. In terms of the judgment of the district court, of course, I would have thought that the district court would have split it 50-50 based on the pro rata clauses in the insurance policies. Secura's assessment and my assessment in the lower court was all based on the policy language, and obviously the pro rata clause is in the Secura policy and the Progressive policy, I would argue, are applicable here. I did not appeal that issue because at the end of the day, the court did grant summary judgment in favor of Secura and Progressive, and at that point, it was not a decision that Secura wanted, you know, nothing that we were going to end up appealing. However, I do think based on the policy language that there should have been a split of 50-50 of that judgment. You know, the reduction of the policy limits by the 800 from AMCO, I believe the case law did support that for the district court's decision. However, based on the fact that in acting in the best faith possible as an insurance company and based on the policy language and not knowing the terms of that settlement, that was the reason that Secura argued the way it did.
But your policy and Progressive's policy is not the same. Progressive's anti-stacking language is if there is other applicable uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage, we will pay only our share of the damages. And then it continues to say if this policy and any other policy providing similar insurance apply to the same accident, the maximum limit of liability under all policies shall be the highest limit of liability. That's Progressive. Secura, your policy says any recovery for damages under this policy and any other policy issued by us. So you're limiting it to policies issued by Secura, it sure seems like. There's some language that could present some ambiguity later about other insurance. And then in the district court, it sure seems to me like you were taking the position that under a reading of Secura's policy, the total you owed, given the prior payments, was over $100,000. You said, "Regard this is page 7 of your memorandum in support of summary judgment. It's undisputed Secura paid the plaintiffs $5,000, right? So you're establishing the set-offs. The total of $250,000 that plaintiffs are entitled to recover under the Secura policy should be reduced by that $5,000. And then obviously you have the pro rata portion of the $100,000. And you in your brief at that point are saying that plaintiffs are entitled to recover in underinsured motorist benefits under the Secura policy $220,000. So why now should we read your policy the same as Progressive's policy and say the only amount owed is $100,000?
My argument in the district court was that was the correct allocation because I did not argue that, I argued that $500,000 should have come from AMCO and that was it. they paid $800 in a settlement, and I didn't know that, we didn't know the terms of that settlement. I know there were other allegations in the complaint against AMCO, which is why I argued it the way I did. I understand that, I understand Your Honor's point on that. I just think the pro rata clauses in all the policies are clear that the remaining limits, whatever they are, should be split on the pro rata distribution, which those, with the, which the policies speak to. And so that's the reason I would think that it should be split 50-50. The court ruled the way it did, and we offered to pay the judgment to appellate, but you know, they took this up on appeal. If there are any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.